The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Football Weekly. James Richardson was sad about the abuse the pod was getting on the blog, so he took a tactical Rushton, safe in the knowledge that by next Monday you will be itching to have him back. I know my role on the pod today, discussing, amongst other things, Spurs winning at City, Arsenal beating Leicester, Lescott's pocket tweeting, slanderous French periscoping, and Messi and Suarez showing Henri and Pires how to do one of those penalties. We have the following fine gentlemen. Barry Glendenning is here.
Hello.
It's so nice to see you.
And you.
It never happens.
Never.
How are you,
Baz? We don't see each other often enough.
You sounded on the pod last Thursday that you were actually quite keen for me to be doing this. I don't know why that was.
I always enjoy broadcasting with you in any capacity.
It's very kind of you. Philippe Auclair is here.
Yes, he is.
Bonjour, how are
you? Yes, I am. I'm not too bad.
You're referring to yourself in the third person almost.
Yeah, it's a football programme. Yeah.
This is a big time. It's a big pod for Philippe Auclair. You have a train to catch, though, don't you?
Yes, I do.
So at any point, you can just walk out. Reference it, and then we just pretend we haven't asked you any more questions by the end.
That's very kind.
Okay. Nick Ames is here.
Hello.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Very well indeed.
We've never met.
No, we haven't. This is quite enchanting. Enchanté, as I think.
Who do you support, Nick?
I support Ipswich Town.
Okay, how are they getting on?
Not especially well. Falling out of a playoff zone.
Okay.
Better than Cambridge United.
Well, it's not hard. A 2-0 defeat at Stevenage was a disappointment for me. Righto then, let's start at the top of the Premier League. Fine margins. Arsenal beat Leicester City 2-1. Spurs beat Manchester City 2-1. Philippe, you were at the Emirates.
Yes, I was.
Did you have a nice time there?
I had a wonderful time indeed.
I wrote some quickfire questions down, which everyone can answer if they'd like to. Should Arsenal have had a free kick in the lead up to Leicester's penalty? When Morgan jumped and sort of basically on Mesut Ozil.
Yes, they should.
In a mismatch. And so it shouldn't have even got to the stage of being a penalty. Was it a penalty, Philippe?
I think Jamie Vardy played it very well and Morel played it very badly.
Nick, should Danny Simpson have been sent off?
I think so in the end. I mean, the second one was a bit soft, wasn't it? But in the end, if you do that twice, you're asking for it once you've been booked once, aren't you? So I wouldn't have a complaint about that.
Yeah, I thought so. He was fouling repeatedly in the build-up before he even got a yellow card. And then to do that, it was a silly challenge or a silly tug so soon after getting booked.
He did look like he was almost about to cry, I thought, when he got sent.
Well, he let everyone down.
Yeah.
But it was soft, wasn't it? Compared to the City game, which obviously we'll go on to, there were a lot of challenges before any yellow cards were branded.
It's preventing him from going past. He's holding him by the arm. It's normally a yellow card. It was a yellow card. And that's not why Leicester came back from the Emirates with nothing to show for. A splendid effort. I'm afraid it's just a rush of blood to the head in the last second by Polish defender Wasilewski.
Who is built like an absolute ton, isn't he, Wasilewski?
He looks like a rugby
player. Got a physique like nothing you see in the Premier League. Anyway.
I did tweet out that he's the Premier League version of that rugby player you text on a Saturday morning to make up the numbers for your team. That's what it seemed like. And then I don't know what he was.
So he's a dead ringer for a ringer.
Isn't he? He really is.
Yes.
I bet he's not even registered, I bet, isn't he? Put a different name down on the team sheet. But up until the sending off, Leicester did what Leicester do, and they did it particularly well, I thought.
They did it for a while. I mean, it's probably the first time this season that you felt from about the 60th minute onwards, of course, they were playing 11-10, but they were playing a 4-4-1, so it shouldn't make a huge difference in terms of defending. That physically they really, really suffered. Also, perhaps it's the first time that they were against a team that can, when it wants, play at great pace, great speed. But yes, they were quite magnificent. And yet again, we saw, for me, the best midfielder in Europe at the moment playing. And N'Golo Kanté was simply phenomenal. The first 25 minutes were were absolutely extraordinary.
All three of them were brilliant.
Oh, he's
he's everywhere.
He was
everywhere. Technically superb, always the right decision, almost never commits any foul. I mean, he got the yellow card for a very clever foul, actually. But, it's funny, at halftime, I think the only thing we were talking about in the press lounge was N'Golo Kanté, thinking, is there a better midfielder in Europe at the moment? And think, gee, probably not.
And I think he brings out the best in the others too. I mean, Danny Drinkwater's always been a good player at Premier League level, a very good one at Championship level, but he's got an extra couple of yards now this season. I think he covers a lot more ground. And I think if you're playing with a guy like Kanté, who covers that much ground and expends that much energy, it's going to spur you on to do more as well. He really leads, I think, everything they do.
Drinkwater covered quite a lot of ground when he steamed into Aaron Ramsey. It was a pretty terrible foul, wasn't it?
I think he should have got a red card for that, definitely.
By all accounts, he's apologised to Ramsey already, and then on Match of the Day they're saying he's not that kind of player. I like that. But yeah, it was a pretty filthy challenge.
Can I add one thing about N'Golo Kanté? Because it is a matter of quite a lot of debate back in France. You know, he's one of those players who had a very discreet start to his professional career, playing Boulogne-sur-Mer, like Franck Ribéry, by the way. And then Caen, and then Leicester, and then suddenly everybody realizes, wow, we've got some player here. And the problem is that he's a binational, so which means he qualifies for France and he qualifies for Mali as well. And we had a chance, a French friend of mine and myself, to ask him yesterday what he was going to do, and he's still undecided. And in France, you can imagine, people are watching him week in, week out with Leicester, and wondering, why has Didier Deschamps never called him? And he hasn't. And if he doesn't act quickly...
Who's in front of him at the moment?
Blaise Matuidi, you can understand that. You've got Paul Pogba, more about him later. You've got Yoann Cabaye. So you've got already in place a very solid midfield trio, but
Presumably Coquelin would be in for that place as well. Was Didier Deschamps there yesterday?
No, you must be joking. I can't remember the last time he was in London, probably when he was playing for Chelsea.
Oh, really?
No, I exaggerate. But it's very rare that he sends scouts out to the Premier League. I think they just rely on videos and, you know, watching the telly and so forth. But for us, it's a real problem, because we could lose an absolutely superb player.
And is there an issue in France that if he's undecided and isn't sure who he's going to pick, that the French public will care and say, oh, well,
the reason why he's undecided, he wants to play for France.
Okay.
Let's be absolutely clear about that. He wants to play for France, but if the call doesn't come and he's got Mali, which is not a bad team at all, who gives him a chance to play international football in the African Cup of Nations, and who knows, better, maybe a World Cup at some point. Why shouldn't he go for it?
But madness not to just pick him for a friendly game, you know, just tick him off.
And he's not the only one in this case. Well, Riyad Mahrez was until recently in the same position. He's born in Sarcelles, Mahrez. He's not born in Algeria, but he's now an Algerian international and will remain an Algerian international. There you go.
I think it's the way in which he's caught everybody, maybe even the French national selectors, off guard this season. I was in Arsene Wenger's press conference on Friday, and he was doing the Sunday paper bit and was asked about Kanté. And he said, I've known about this guy since he was 10, because a very good friend of his, who he didn't name actually, and we should have pressed him on that, a good friend of his knew Kanté from back then and kept telling him about him. And he never made a move for him because he couldn't, and Arsene said this himself, couldn't envisage what was going to happen this season. So clearly people right at the very top have just been completely foxed by this.
Wow, Wenger foxed by this.
Inadvertent, and it's a Monday morning, so I can't do much better than that.
So. Pleased for Danny Welbeck, because a year out is a long time out for any professional footballer, isn't it?
Yes, quite extraordinary, really. How many headlines could you write from that single game? And that was one of them. And interestingly as well, with Sturridge scoring on the same day, I don't know which odds you would have got for this one, that also puts Roy Hodgson in a rather enviable position. When you think about it, there's...
Because he's got to pick Vardy and Kane and Rooney.
He
will do.
Yeah.
And how many strikers can you pick?
Five.
Five,
maybe?
Five.
Emile Heskey scored for Bolton on Saturday
as
well.
That is correct.
So, you know, he'll be hopeful of a call.
He does a lot of hard work that's unrecognised, though, Heskey, doesn't he?
Yes.
Before we decide who's going to win the Premier League, should we look at Man City Spurs and then we'll analyse them as a four? What did you make of this game, Barry? I presume you sat there in the local pub with a pint of Guinness watching this one.
Why would you assume such a thing?
Because I just presume that.
I really enjoyed the game. Wasn't Guinness.
It was just lager, wasn't it?
It was a great game, thoroughly enjoyable. I expected Tottenham to win. They went the goal up, obviously, and conceded an equaliser, and thought, well, a draw will do them, and it won't be much use to City. But, yeah, fair play. The super fit team kept plugging away and got a late winner.
Yeah, I was at the Etihad, and it was quite interesting to...
Should have come to you before I came to Barry in the pub, really, shouldn't I? But
no, Barry probably got a much better view over it with his pint of Guinness or whatever than I got. But it was interesting to see how City set up. They had Fernando in front of Kompany, who'd come back, and they were very compact, and it was almost an acceptance of their own recent limitations, as in, OK, teams have been playing through us, Spurs are very good at playing through people, we're going to restrict and sit back and maybe counter a bit. And I thought City, in the first half, they gave Spurs a lot of possession, but they actually played quite well, worked quite hard. You had Aguero tracking back once or twice even to stop some of the long diagonal transitions that come from the centre-backs. And I thought they could go in at half-time feeling fairly happy. Pochettino was even getting a bit frustrated at times when Spurs' passing moves broke down. And then, of course, it all hinged on that one incident that really blew the game wide open shortly after half-time, I think 7 minutes after half-time, shortly after Aguero had actually missed a good chance by his standards. It was actually a bit of a sitter by his standards for City. But I think Mark Clattenburg definitely takes the headlines in terms of what followed.
It's never a penalty, is it? It's
as Claudio Ranieri says, if the referee says it's a penalty, it's a penalty. And anyway, City equalised. So I think we can bat this one in the long grass and look rather at what happened after that.
Because actually City were so much better than they were against Leicester, weren't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, Vincent Kompany is back, which helps.
Yeah.
Kevin De Bruyne is not back, which doesn't help. I think they really, really miss him, and the fact that he's speedy, technically very astute, gives them penetration on the right flank that, you know, his replacements can't. But yes, I mean, City were not poor. I don't think it was a bad performance by them. Simply, it was a very mature, really quite superb performance by Tottenham.
And it was a brilliant change by Pochettino as well, because, to be honest, as that game went into the final 10 minutes, it looked as if only one team was really pressing, only one team was going to make that last chance to win the game, and it wasn't Spurs. And he took off Dele Alli and put on Lamella, which seemed like a bold one at the time, because he had Chadli there, who maybe is a bit better known for working hard, getting up and down, and a couple more defensive options too. But he picked Lamella, and City had taken Fernando off by then and brought on Iheanacho, who scored the equaliser. And there was that gap. There was that gap to drive at that other teams, such as Leicester, such as West Ham before, had got at in previous weeks. And that gap was there for the first time, really, in the game. And that is the gap that Lamella drove into. He drew Otamendi, who for the second game in a row was silly and committed himself too early and got exposed, and played in Lamella. And I thought, fair play to Pochettino, because he saw the opportunity and he took it. And it was another example of what I think is incredibly clear-headed management and the clear-headed strategy in Tottenham. I think that's a good word to describe this club and this team, kind of like lucid and clear-headed. And I don't think there's another club operating quite in the same way as them at the moment.
Another thing is the remarkable versatility of the midfielders they've got. All of them different profiles, which means that they don't just have a plan A, they have a plan B, plan C, plan D, and so forth. They can call upon players who have got very different qualities, well, perhaps not top players, would say, but really international class footballers. And in midfield, I think they've got the most options of any club I can think of in the Premiership at the moment.
And Dembele's had a fantastic season, hasn't he?
Yep. And again, he's different from the others. He's somebody who drives the ball, is a dribbler. You look at Eriksen. Well, I suppose Tom Carroll perhaps is the closer to Eriksen. But you look at Dyer, you look at Ali, you think Aldamela, you think, and Chadli, and you think, well, he's got so many options he can play with. And he's very, very good at using them. And also changing his team, like you change your two fullbacks. And have you seen a difference? Not really, as a matter of fact.
But Danny Rose was superb yesterday, you know, and Kyle Walker's pretty good as well. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you mentioned the multifacetedness of the midfield in particular. it's interesting if you compare the team with the one that I think in 2012 lost 3-2 at City in a proper ding-dong of a game, the sort that Spurs used to be involved in. And I think if they won that, they'd have gone within 2 points of City, who were leading. And the front five that day, Modric, Van der Vaart, Lennon, Defoe, Bale, you look back and you go, whew, but you also look at the team now and you think that exactly as Philippe said, it's multidisciplined.
And actually,
Maybe didn't have that then.
Kevin Vimmer's come in and done a very good job, because Vertonghen and Alderweireld are a brilliant partnership, and he's done exceptionally well to come in. And
I was at Maurizio Pochettino's press conference on Friday, and he had likened Sergio Aguero to Mozart.
So
he was asked, you know, if Kevin Vimmer would be able to contain this musical genius, and he made the point that as an Austrian, Wimmer should be equally, you know, exalted in the classical music stakes.
Behind them,
no, he did.
Behind them, Hugo Lloris did make that touch, was well, that got them the 3 points, did it, in the 93rd minute or something.
Yep.
And he's not underrated actually as a goalkeeper.
I think he is.
Do you think he is?
Yes, completely. Certainly back home.
Oh, really?
I don't think people realise how good he is, because they don't see him week in, week out as we do. But I thought you saw a quality in him yesterday that perhaps is not always in evidence, which is his bravery, his courage, physical courage, because, you know, it's Otamendi, it's a big guy. And this complete lack of concern for his own health and safety is quite remarkable. It's funny, I was with Neville Southall, somebody who knows a few things about goalkeeping, a while ago, and we were talking about the keepers in the Premier League, which probably in terms of goalkeepers has got perhaps the best. That's one of the domains in which they can say it's the best league, yes, the best keepers. And he actually put Lloris ahead of players like De Gea and Cech, and said he's the best keeper in the league in terms of his footballing brain as well.
Because they build from him, actually, don't they?
Yes,
build from him at the back, and he very rarely knocks it long.
Well, you know, he was a centre forward to start
was he?
With. Yes, absolutely.
All right, then. So, will we have the dream? Okay, four teams can all win the Premier League on the last day of the season. Nick,
I would love to say yeah, and I just hope that Leicester go away on their 10-day break, which I think they've got now, and put yesterday behind them and come back, and I think they've got a nice game next against Norwich, haven't
they?
They've
got a nice... This is the next few games. Norwich, West Brom, Watford, Newcastle, Palace, Southampton, Sunderland, West Ham, Swansea. I mean, you couldn't really write, apart from the fact they don't play Villa once, and you could hardly write a nicer fixture list. Really.
Yeah, you could also argue the fact that Leicester are perhaps even better against the big guys than they are against teams where they have to take the game and make the play and dominate. But I think they're perfectly capable of doing that too.
I think quite a few of those games might be more difficult for them than the previous three against the bigger teams.
They don't have many games to play. Spurs have got a lot of games to play.
Well, Leicester have 12. Spurs could have as many as 27, I think, 28. Now, it's unlikely they'll have to play that many. Although the way they're going, it's difficult to see who's going to beat them in any game.
They've got Fiorentina on Thursday. At some point, Pochettino's got to start picking and choosing which competition he goes for, doesn't he?
I would have thought so. I mean, he's not rotated at times this season as much as I thought he would. And I think he said earlier on in the season that he's got to know better than last season the physical capabilities of the players he's dealing with, which I assume is pretty high. But in recent weeks, he's taken to changing the fullbacks a bit, hasn't he? And he's and he has, as I think Philippe said earlier, got a lot of nice options in midfield. The problem, and we keep on coming back to it, is up top what you do. Whether you at some point say, okay, we're going to give Harry Kane the cup games off, or whether you just keep him going. And I know it's old hat, really, and an obvious point to make, but if there's one doubt about Tottenham, it just is that position. What happens if something happens to Harry Kane?
5th of March, Spurs-Arsenal. It's a great game, that.
Absolutely. Big cross in the diary. we'll be there.
And who's going to win the league, Barry?
I think Tottenham are going to win the league.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'd go along with Barry.
Interesting.
I know, that's... And probably if you ask me next week, or in 2 weeks' time, I'll say something completely
different. Well, when Manchester City last won the title, they lost to Arsenal and went 8 points behind in April. and called it back and won it. So there's still a third of the season left, isn't it? We have to remember that.
Well, yes, but we're talking about a completely different league. You look at... I'm looking and only one team, Leicester, has got more than 2 points per game and is 2.05 or something like that, which is ridiculously low compared to the other leagues and also compared to previous seasons, which means like a 6 point... I mean, yes, Man City, yes, are 6 points behind Leicester. That's an awful lot in the context of this particular season. And you can't see as well, when you look at Manchester City's recent performances, they're playing a bit better, but you can't see a dominant conquering side in there. And the only one for me which looks like that is Spurs, and has looked like that for a while.
Welcome to part two, where we'll look at Liverpool and Chelsea. Yesterday, Liverpool won 6-0 at Aston Villa. I confess, I changed from... I didn't think this game deserved television, so I put it on the laptop and had the cricket on the television.
Okay.
Because I was going to watch... I watched Arsenal Leicester, I was going to watch City Spurs. I just thought I'd just have some cricket on the telly for a bit. But I did watch it. Very much enjoyed Colo Torre's header. Literally, it was just a beanpole just stood there and it hit him on the head. I mean, how he could be unmarked with no movement is quite extraordinary. Was this game Liverpool being great or Aston Villa being truly terrible? Barry?
I think a little bit of both. Aston Villa were unspeakably awful. I mean, it was... totally embarrassing for their supporters, who must be absolutely appalled. I confess, I actually bet money on Aston Villa to win this game before it started.
I think I predicted a 1-0 win.
I genuinely thought they would have the beat of Liverpool. That was before I realised Daniel Sturridge would start, and it seems he made a huge difference. Now, you have to temper all this analysis with the caveat it was only Aston Villa and we can't read too much into it because they're so bad. I mean, that's possibly the worst performance of any team in Premier League history. But Liverpool got to start with Coutinho, Daniel Sturridge and Roberto Firmino for the first time ever, I believe. And yeah, what a great combination they were. But again, it was only Aston Villa.
Nick?
The thing that really gets me as an Ipswich fan in games like this is that happens once or twice a season. A team gets to sort of 6-0 after an hour and there's 30, 40,000 tractor boys around East Anglia, whatever, thinking, hang on, the 9-0 is going to go. The 9-0 is now going to go and we're not going to have that monkey on our back forever. And then the last 20 minutes don't happen, and that's exactly what happened yesterday, really. I think maybe Klopp actually... I think he said afterwards that it was sad to see a club like Aston Villa in that kind of state, which it is, because I think the way they've been led upstairs, it's not just on the pitch, is really, really quite poor. But I think it could have been a few more goals if they hadn't maybe gone a bit easy towards the end.
It was Valentine's Day, and the most romantic part of the day was Origi, basically a Liverpool fan, getting off with him against his will in the crowd. Did you see where Origi scored?
Yes.
Ran into the crowd, and, you know...
It was a very tender moment.
It really was, but I mean, the fan, I don't know if you saw this, Philippe, the fan, he really went for it. Like, it wasn't just like peck on the cheek, oh, I've kissed Origi. It was like, I think I'm in here. and then he went in for the kill. Philippe, when Remy Gard took that job, did you think, that's a terrible decision, why has he done that?
No, I didn't think so at the time. I mean, I'm now asking myself questions, but I thought, no, it's a very, very tough job, obviously. I would have thought he'd been given guarantees in terms of recruitment. Not that they were very successful in that department. And he needs, you know, he came back from this sabbatical. I don't think it's actually going to hurt his reputation too much, because I think it's going there, you're almost condemned to a slow, painful death, really.
Do you think he'll stay if they go down, and presumably
if it carries on like that, I don't think so. Although, if they manage... Because there had been signs that somehow they were a little bit more... there was a bit of fight in that team. In terms of talent, you have to say, it is probably the worst squad in the Premier League, with, in particular, big problems in defence, and not just because Julian Lescott tweets pictures of expensive cars.
It was brilliant, that.
After a fashion, yes.
So.
By the way, there's one. Did you hear about this poor chap who went all the way from Australia to watch Aston Villa for the second time in his life? I genuinely hope that Randy Lerner is going to reimburse that chap.
He can't have just... I mean, you really want him to land at midday, get to Birmingham for kickoff, and then fly back. Do you reckon he was... Was it just part... It was like the catalyst to a bigger holiday, or was it the only thing he came for?
I think he genuinely came to see Aston Villa.
Jolyon Lescott sent a tweet. I'm not a huge car man. I believe it's a Mercedes S63 AMG Coupe. And lots of Villa fans were very disappointed that he'd sent this picture of a car.
It was the only thing that could go from 0 to 6-0 in less time than Villa.
And then he sent this next tweet, which said, I'm sure everybody listening has seen it, but just in case you haven't, he said, "I'm not one for tweeting after games, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. I'd like to apologise for the performance today, personally and collectively. Liverpool are and were better than us. That doesn't excuse mine and the team's lack of commitment for the 90 minutes. Again, apologies to all the fans. I would like to add that the tweet sent from my account involving a picture of a car was totally accidental. It happened while driving and my phone was in my pocket."
He must have really tight trousers if his pocket's doing that.
To unlock the phone...
If it's an iPhone, it's fingerprint or password sensitive anyway.
Yeah.
But even if you circumvent the quite onerous security measures, there's a lot to do, isn't there? There's a lot.
Maybe there are some borrowers living in Jolyon Lescott. You know, little people.
Well, I mean, even if we give him the benefit of the doubt, which, you know, the general acceptance seems to be that he was making the point, well, I may have lost 6-0, but I could afford this very nice car. But I think if that's what he did, it wasn't very wise for a number of reasons. Possibly the main one being, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that there probably aren't too many cars like that in the Birmingham area. And he now, lots of Birmingham City fans, West Brom fans, disgruntled Aston Villa fans, all know what Jolyon Scott's car looks like. So if they see it out and about, who knows? Some of them may be tempted to commit random acts of vandalism on it.
I will say that if you know, the blog does not react positively to this podcast, I will tweet a picture of my sort of sensible 1.2-litre engined automatic city car as a sign that I have a car.
Well, yours is an Audi.
It is, yeah.
Silver.
Yes,
I believe it's got RI0 in the reg.
Yes, it does, yeah.
And it can often be found in the sort of Hatfields area of Waterloo.
On a Sunday morning.
On a Sunday morning,
it can.
Yeah.
Actually, someone, because I don't get it washed a lot, someone did some graffiti in the dust on the top of it, as you can imagine what you might draw. A part of anatomy. It's been on there for quite a long time, actually. It's a very Alan Partridge type thing. So poor old Jolyon. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt, shall we? Why not? Although Stan Collymore tweeted between the picture of the car and Jolyon explaining it was his phone in his pocket, Jolyon tweeted that he'd been in touch. I mean, Stan Collymore tweeted that he'd been in touch with Jolyon Lescott's brother, who said that Jolyon's phone had been hacked.
It was quite funny because lots of other just random people started tweeting photos of their cars, like it was, you know, Ford Focuses.
And then people were saying, how do we know that the apology wasn't tweeted from Jolyon's pocket as well? It's a good question. Anyway, Villa, we think, are down. Elsewhere, teams that are struggling, Newcastle lost 5-1 at Chelsea. Chelsea unbeaten under Hiddink. Great finishing in this game, I thought. Including Andros Townsend's. Shall we start with Newcastle and how doomed they are, whether they're doomed? What do you think, Philip?
I think that until the 6-0 at Villa Park, we probably thought that this was the most appalling performance we'd seen from any Premier League this season, Newcastle.
I mean, Newcastle have been abject a few times.
But this was, in terms of abjection, another level. an eighth circle of hell. We didn't know existed, but they managed to find it.
I think they're a gift given by the Premier League for any team that needs a bit of a pick-me-up, aren't they? It just routinely happens. And Chelsea obviously could have done with a fairly an exacting run out before PSG, which is on Tuesday, and the scheduling isn't great. And they absolutely got it, didn't they? It was a mass dereliction of duty, and I've definitely used that phrase about them before this season.
Chelsea go to PSG, as you said, Nick. You're going there? Is that where your train's going?
No, I'm going to another place.
Oh, okay. Oh, sounds exciting. I want to know more. What do we think about... No John Terry, obviously Zuma's out already. Chelsea's chances at PSG?
I genuinely don't think it matters that much. I mean, Branislav Ivanovic, the centre-half, I think most Chelsea fans will be very happy with that. Because in a way, it solves one problem, which is the lack of pace of Ivanovic. And the fact now Cesar Azpilicueta is going to play on the right... and he's pacey, and with Baba Rahman, who is, you know, pretty decent player, and is also very pacey on the left. So perhaps they will perhaps lack the experience of Terry and his reading of the game and so forth, but they will gain something as well. I think the much more important problem for Chelsea is the suspension of Nemanja Matic. Just at the moment that he seemed to come back into good form, which means he probably will have to go with John Obi Mikel and Cesc Fabregas in midfield against a PSG team which has got a rather formidable midfield itself, despite the fact that it's not sure that Massimo Verratti will be fit for the game.
One PSG player who won't be playing is Serge Aurier. He's out Lescotted himself.
Oh, man.
He's been suspended indefinitely after going on a Periscope. I don't know if any of you Periscope with...
it's a very bad idea.
Great regularity.
My pocket does quite frequently.
Yeah. Sure it does. Barry?
No, I'm not even sure what it is.
Periscope is live... It sounds very euphemistic, doesn't it?
That's why my interest has peaked.
No, he was totally clothed, I'm sorry to say, Barry.
You're thinking of Peniscope, I think.
Yes. Philip, I really thought you were better than that. But it's live video tweeting. So instead of just sort of sending a picture.
What's his name? Our grime mate. Lethal Bizzle did it from our studio.
He did during a meeting of minds on TalkSport one Sunday. So Serge Aurier went on Periscope and basically did a Q&A. And the thing is, if you ever go on social media and you do a Q&A, you get asked a lot of questions. And most of them... you sort of have to edit out, really, because they're rude. But he just answered all the questions.
Which were asked by a chap was sitting in front of a laptop with this massive shisha and was reading from the screen and talking in this very, very strange French, sort of banlieue French, using loads of very rude words. And Oya was there. It was absolutely hilarious to watch. But it's unbelievable. At the beginning, you think, he can't be saying this. I have misheard that. And no, he genuinely did. And what is extraordinary is that he begged for forgiveness afterwards, but he started by saying, what I've done is unforgivable. Mm. So I don't know why he's begging for forgiveness.
Producer Ben says, what did he say, Philip?
I'm not too sure that it can be repeated. He questioned Laurent Blanc's sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. He also suggested that Laurent Blanc was performing sex acts on Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
What?
He also told everyone what he thought of players like Sirigu.
Said he was finished, didn't he?
Had
a few beers, like?
He doesn't drink.
Oh, right.
Maybe he had a bit of shisha before. You know, he can play with your brain. No, I think he was just...
smells really strawberry, doesn't it, shisha? Walking down the Edgware Road.
I think it's just a case of a guy who is, by all accounts, is not a bad guy, but who is not the cleverest, and was talking as if he were with his mates, and not realising this was broadcast to the world. He had previous, because there was a Clásico, PSG Marseille before that, a while ago. And he filmed himself and shared on social media his reaction when PSG beat OM. And he wasn't playing for PSG, he was injured. And he's there, literally screaming at the screen and insulting the referee and calling him hijo de puta.
Do we have to bleep that out or not?
I think everybody's understood that. Yeah. It was suspended for three games. I think this time, I think they probably put him in a parcel and send it to Guangzhou or something like that.
What's the French for "it was just a bit of banter"?
Yeah, it's a bit like Benzema, was just a bit of banter. Oh, really? Yes. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a whole right. other story. Yeah. So anyway, he won't be playing.
No. and that's a real loss for PSG, because he was very, very good.
Do you think they'll treat him slightly... Football clubs tend to treat their better players slightly differently to someone who's
that
useless.
Good. He's okay. good, but he's not
right.
that good.
I'm with you.
And listen, after what he said about Zlatan, if I were Saint-Germain, I would be very, very careful next time I walk in at the training camp. Very, very careful. And Laurent Blanc is a pretty solid chap, too.
He should probably come in filming it on Periscope just in case. Absolutely. Shouldn't he? All right, Philip, this is your 10-minute warning, okay? But just walk Thank out you. While we're talking. It's fine. It'll add a bit of sort of live actuality as you bump past Barry.
Sound effects as
yeah,
well.
All you know, of that. Like... you're not leaving quite yet, Philippe. Right. Okay. We mentioned Newcastle, who are struggling. Sunderland also struggling. But they beat Manchester United, Barry. You must have been over the moon.
I was, yeah, thrilled. I didn't see that one coming. Like the Liverpool 6, Aston Villa 0, I didn't see it coming. But, yeah, Sunderland worked hard. Manchester United were dreadful. I'm not sure it was a huge shock. Although Jonathan Wilson has made the point that I think that's the fifth time Sunderland have beaten Manchester United at home in the league. And the other four times it happened, they were relegated. So, as omens go, it's not a great one. But, you know, it was a very good weekend for Sunderland. They got 3 points, other teams around them dropped points. So, Manchester United were pretty dreadful, but Sunderland took full advantage.
LVG said he was sad, Nick.
Yeah, I'm sad for him as well. but frankly, it was Man United back to how they have so often been after a blighter few weeks, really, hadn't it been? I think he overstated it a week or two ago when he said they've been playing sparkling football, but they have been playing better football. But it feels with United all the time at the moment that if they take a step forward, they take two steps back a week or two later. But that's not to take away from Sunderland. I think Sunderland too have got a bit of a find in Lamine Kone by the looks of that. He gets up very well, looked good with the ball at his feet too. And I know Norwich looked at him very closely and a few other teams down the bottom. But you kind of wonder whether he could even have done a job for a team higher up. I don't know what the buzz, Philippe, was about him at Lorient. But.
No, he had very good, absolutely very good reputation, highly rated players, and no doubt about that. I wouldn't say necessarily the same for Kasri, who has the reputation of being a hard worker, but not really a class player. There's one thing that surprised me, but I think Sunderland fans must be quite pleased with the performances of, I never thought I would say that, of Yann-Emile Villa. Oh, he's been excellent.
Surprisingly excellent, because I think probably you said to me, I don't think you had very high hopes for him.
I didn't think so.
He's a player of good ability, but why is he going to a club like Sunderland? And I think he's a bit of a bad boy, is he?
He had a bad
reputation. So other sort of bigger or more prestigious, say, for want of a better word, clubs wouldn't look at him. But he's really worked hard. He's very popular with the supporters and looks a real find, you know, if he can stay on the straight and narrow.
Is that classic Allardyce? Because I don't think he brought him in, did he? But he really likes to get these talents who've maybe been a bit wayward and then chisel them out a bit like he did at Bolton. And if he's
like Pippa from Home and Away.
Say again?
It's like Pippa from Home and Away.
Remember when Pippa changed actress?
At least twice.
It was googly-eyed Pippa, and then suddenly it was larger, brown-haired Pippa.
With dark hair.
And why was Zinvia banned from the French national team?
He was banned just after a game the under-23s lost 5-3 against Norway, which he had prepared by taking a car, driving from Paris to Le Havre to go to a nightclub and then driving back.
He wasn't alone in that escapade, was he?
Jolyon Lescott was with him,
yeah,
Jolyon Lescott was driving.
Antoine Griezmann was with him in that escapade, amongst others. Yann-Emile Villa is also well known for quite an extraordinary episode in which he went to a police station to complain that that a hooker had stolen his watch. And the guy said, yeah.
Well, you want to get your watch back, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly right. You didn't, if you paid up, you know, the watch is your property. quality, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm looking at, you know, Sunderland. I'm looking. They have got one of the best... they've got the best records of the teams over the last seven games from the teams... from the 13th position downwards, yeah, it's
and you wouldn't back against Big Sam, would you? Right, that is
no, absolutely not.
That's the end of part two. In part three, the rest of the Premier League, some foreign, and Philippe Auclair's live departure. Welcome back to part three. Coming up, the rest of the Premier League, a hard match of the day for Roy Hodgson because there weren't any interesting games for him to comment on. But let's talk about Italy, Philippe, because you want to say a few things before you dash to the Eurostar.
Yes, I've really got an axe to grind problem, perhaps. And it's about Paul Pogba. Mm-hmm. And I know he's supposedly one of the hottest properties in football. There's some unbelievable sums have been mentioned, 70, 80 million euros, something like that. All the big clubs are after him. If it's not Manchester City, it's going to be Barcelona. If it's not Barcelona, it's going to be Bayern, whatever. I thought he was absolutely awful in that particular game. And unfortunately, it's been like this several times. And I think he's one of those players, the talent is... I mean, it's so bleeding obvious. You can see the physicality, you can see the technique, the shot that he has on him as well. But he always does the extra thing he shouldn't be doing. He seems to think he's a 6, an 8, and a 10 at the same time, sometimes a 9, and is consistently losing the ball in very dangerous positions. And then he will do one extraordinary thing. And then you think, wow, what a player. But forgetting that the rest of the time, he's been absolutely awful, and I know that's very strong words to say that to use about a player who is supposedly one of the hottest properties in European football. But if he doesn't simplify his game, shall we say, I don't think he will ever reach the level that you know that people think is his.
Barry, you made a face. Do you want to say what you really think when Philippe's gone, or are you brave enough to say it now?
I just think he's been very harsh.
He annoys me, because when you've got talent like that, when you've got, I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, honestly, unique talent.
One of my abiding memories from the game is Pogba. He just looks so much bigger and faster than everyone else, like a kind of a monster truck.
He is.
Rolling over a row of, you know, dilapidated, clapped-out cars.
Nobody's saying that's not the case.
Mm.
You know, if you look at the players who were on the pitch, he is perhaps the most talented of them all in that particular game. But it's the way he uses this talent. And the fact is, it's been a while. He's still very young, of course. But it's been a while since we've seen him play at the kind of level he showed about 2 years ago.
Do you think that in that case, Manchester City, like if he makes his much spoken of departure eventually, do you think that Man City under Guardiola could be the best club for him? Given that
I think he's got to go in a club, he's got to go to a club where people don't consider him to be the best player, and as simple as that.
And also, Guardiola is very fastidious, isn't he? Like you, as Thierry Henry said really well on Monday Night Football several weeks ago, you don't get away with being in the wrong place. You do your improvisation once you've been in the right place for two-thirds of the pitch. So
which is why I'm not saying that he's a crap player and he's awful and so forth. What I'm saying is he's a super player, but who is at the moment in the wrong place, both in terms of club and his own head.
Breaking news, Philippe Auclair hates everything about Paul Pogba.
I don't.
Now you have to leave.
It's precisely because I actually rate him very, very highly that I'm very frustrated.
You want to help the man, don't you?
No, it's because I thought, honestly, 2 years ago, this guy is going to become something really extra special.
Are you...
I'm disappointed.
Are you going to reach out? When Jack Grealish was having his struggle, Paul Merson, who presents the excellent Fantasy Football Club on Sky Sports, he reached out to Jack Grealish to say, look, I can help you. Would you like to reach out? Would you like to use this pod to reach out to Paul Pogba?
No, not really.
Okay. did they deserve to win, Juve?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a really interesting game, but... both teams going into it on the back of long winning streaks. Napoli's manager, Maurizio Sarri, he played down these teams' chances in the build-up to the game, but I thought they gave a very good account of themselves, and it was a very, very late winner that they conceded, I think the 87th minute. You wouldn't begrudge Juve their win. It was an excellent winning goal by Simone Zaza,
who's sort of not been doing so well of late or this season, but a brilliantly struck goal. I think it took a little bit of a deflection on the way in, but yeah, and Napoli had every right to be disappointed. A draw, I think, would have been a fair result.
And as we speak, Philippe Auclair dons his...
flouncing out in a Gallic huff.
His long trench coat and his very smart hat.
Trilby, is it?
A trilby on and a,
it's a trilby,
and a copy of the Times he had.
au revoir, Philippe.
In his smart leather bag, and he leaves. Was he right about Pogba? Was he talking about...
Ah, talking rubbish.
Maybe a bit harsh, I think. And Pogba's still young, and he could probably do with experiencing a bit more. Maybe playing for another club, actually, to be fair. Yeah, harsh.
I was genuinely surprised at that attack. I didn't think he was that bad at all.
I now feel very bad for him. The world's top 100 footballers ranking that we did before Christmas, putting him at number 3. I think he'll be excommunicated from any pod that Philippe is on in future.
Roma beat Carpi 3-1, so they move above Inter into fourth. Roma in Champions League action this week at home to Real Madrid. Do we give them any chance?
Probably not.
All right. Real beat Athletic Bilbao 4-2, and that briefly put them a point behind Barcelona. And then Barcelona played on Sunday night and demolished Celta Vigo 6-1 with that penalty where Messi ran up and didn't shoot, just pushed it to the side, and Suarez scored. How do we feel about this?
I don't want to be awful, but I've got a feeling that Suarez moved a bit too early. Might have been inside the box.
So we need to go back and retake it?
Yes, but it's nice to see. I was surprised that, they did it at 3-1, actually, because there was 10 minutes to go. Vigo had played fairly well, actually, for the majority of that game, and it wasn't a completely done deal. So it was a bold thing to do. I don't have any complaints about the sportsmanship of it, which I've seen quite a lot of on Twitter.
It's massively disrespectful. It's like 11-a-side. It's like taking your keeper out and putting him up front and putting someone in goal.
It's a way to score a goal, that's all.
Yeah, well, I mean, people get their smalls in a twist, say, or have done in the past, if Ronnie O'Sullivan plays a frame against them left-handed. And they say it's showboating, unnecessary. And it probably is, but he can do it. Why not?
Does this, Tom asks on Twitter, statistically, does this go down as a missed penalty by Lionel Messi?
I saw that and it was an excellent question.
Which you don't have the answer?
No, I don't. And I tried to argue it with myself twice, but I think it probably does, doesn't it?
And in the world of stats, does it go down as a pass or a shot on target?
Well, it wasn't on target, was it?
Oh, of course it wasn't.
It was just going wide. I think
because in the rules of the game you are allowed to do that from a penalty, hence them doing it, then it goes down as a pass and an assist, maybe. Maybe that's how we clear it up. Because
Thierry Henry and Bobby Pires famously tried it, didn't they, against Manchester City?
Really
made
badly.
A complete dog's breakfast of it.
It's like the chip down the middle. If it works, it looks great. And if it doesn't, and the keeper just stands there and catcher gets cheers, it just looks ridiculous. Also in Spain, Gary Neville won.
Yes.
Which is a good thing for Gary. There, obviously, no part of any of us wanted him to go all league games and no wins, didn't we?
Well, I didn't.
No, I didn't. Nick?
No, I didn't. And especially as he's on a bit of a hiding to nothing there all round, I think, both in the club he's been... Well, maybe opted to be parachuted into, and with the Spanish media as they are, I think they're even worse than us in terms of what they expect as well. So I think good for him. From what I gather, they didn't play especially well. I think the supporters, he said afterwards, stuck with them and almost sort of started sucking the ball into the net for that winning goal. And hopefully he can push on, because I don't know why we would sneer at him. I don't know why someone goes out there and they lose a few games and we all start laughing.
They just like to build people up to knock them down.
They do. It's iconoclasm at its worst.
That win takes them up to 11th. They're home to Rapid Vienna on Thursday night. Barry, you have sad news about a Rapid Vienna legend.
Yes, Trifon Ivanov.
Hard-faced Bulgarian.
Yes, brilliantly mulleted Bulgarian from the famous Bulgaria team that got to the semi-finals, USA 94. He was a defender. He had possibly the greatest mullet in the history of football. He was nicknamed the Wolfman, one of his former teammates, I'm not sure who, said he was the only player who could start a game clean shaven and after 90 minutes would have a full beard. A shot on him like a thunderbolt. He wasn't adverse to trying, you know, shots from 40, 50 yards out. David Squires actually has done a cartoon about him, another one of his brilliant cartoons, which I think will be up on the site on Tuesday, in which he said, you know, any player hard enough to incur the wrath of Hristo Stoichkov by trying shots from 40 yards when a pass was on is clearly, you know, made of stern stuff. So he football fans of a certain age will all know who Trifon Ivanov is. He was part of that Bulgaria team, like I say, with Mikhailov, the goalkeeper, Yankov, Kostadinov.
Lechkov
with his little hair island. It was a brilliantly haired international football team and a very successful team. They came fourth in World Cup 94. So he, news broke on Saturday, he died at age just 50 of a massive heart attack.
Yeah, great shame. Best mullet in football is a massive shout. I mean, there's huge competition there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Chris Waddle.
Stand over.
You say over Waddle? Yeah. Over Ian Marshall?
Ian Marshall, who was an outstanding player with a mullet, and then once his hair got cut off, he was atrocious.
Samson-esque.
It was Samson-esque. Whereas I was looking at that Bulgarian team earlier and saying to Barry, actually, in the office, that the player with the most sublime technique in that team was probably Lechkov, him of the little hair island. He was definitely the most silky skilled of them all. We mustn't forget, by the way, that Bobby Mikhailov, who you mentioned, had a bit of a toupee going on, didn't he?
Yes, he really did. Oh, that was fantastic. Well,
anyone who hasn't heard of Ivanov, if you look him up on YouTube, he scored a fine goal against Wales once, and Rob Smythe was mentioned to us that I think it was Emil Kostadinov, he said.
Kostadinov, yeah.
Shouldn't even have played in that game because he didn't have a visa, but they'd sneaked him in the boot of a car.
Oh, well, if anybody on the blog wants to add to either the best mullets in football or toupees in football, we'll read them out on Thursday. Okay, let's before we have a look at the Saturday's Premier League games, Barry, you did a live pod in Bristol on Thursday.
Yes.
Is that the one that you record and then send out? You do a separate one and then you send that along?
No, this one doesn't get recorded. It's for audience members only.
Is it because it's blue?
There's a bit of blue for the dads, you know.
Are you the Roy Chubby Brown of this outfit?
No, I'm not, actually. I think it was James Richardson was the Roy Chubby. He was wearing the flying hat and goggles.
does his blue set just before you come on.
No, it was great fun. Nice crowd, as always. And I think it was about 200 of our closest friends, which is kind of small, actually, by live podcast standards. But
so you're saying the people of Bristol have let you down?
No, I'm saying that's all the venue could hold. We possibly should have been in a bigger venue, maybe next time. But, I really enjoyed it. It's always good fun.
The next one is Thursday, the 12th of May in Liverpool, and just added to the lineup, Barry Glendening.
Oh, good.
Do you know who else is doing it with you?
I know Greg Bukowski's doing it, and I'm not sure who else. Oh, John Ashton.
Oh, okay.
I'm told. A voice in my head has just said John Ashton.
Tickets still available. Nick, you not invited to do the live pod yet? Where are you in the pod standings, do you think?
I would have thought I'm pretty much below Cambridge United in the table. I've made that joke twice now. NFI, I think.
But when they go to the footballing hotbed that is East Anglia.
When they go to Ipswich, there's got to be a go. If I'm not invited for that, I know that that's career over, basically.
Right, let's look at the Premier League games. Did anything excite you, or do you want me to go through the matches and ask you one question?
Well, Norwich threw away another two-goal lead, which could cost them dearly. They're looking increasingly doomed. Their defence, I think, is just not good enough to stay in this Premier League, and with Sunderland in something of a resurgence, you wouldn't fancy Norris's chances of staying up at all.
I like how you pronounce Sunderland, like Sunderland, like it's a bad theme park.
This has been noted on the pod before. Sunderland.
Oh, no. Sunderland. It's not really Sunderland. Lovely strike from Mark Noble. Every time he scores a goal, people say Mark Noble should have got one England cap. Where do you stand on that?
I think he should have definitely got
more than one England cap. I mean, there are worse central midfielders than him have been capped in the time since he's been playing. I'd be wholeheartedly in favour of him perhaps getting some Ireland caps if he wanted them, but I think it's an avenue he looked down but wasn't interested enough to play. He does qualify for the Republic of Ireland, but
and he's much younger than because he started so young. He's you sort of think he's 35, but he's only 28 or something.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good player, seems to be a model pro, rarely injured, as far as I know. Do you know him personally?
No. But he is on fantasy football this week.
He strikes me as the kind of guy you might, you know, go playing golf with of a Wednesday afternoon.
Who do I go and play golf with on a Wednesday that's like Mark Noble?
Hayden Mullins.
That was said in your ear.
No,
that four ball, me, Hayden Mullins, Nigel Riococo and Chris Bart-Williams.
Who won?
I've never played that round of golf, Nick, I'll be brutally honest.
What's the most star-studded four-ball you've ever been involved in?
Oh,
I know you fist-bumped Stevie Gerrard in the gents' toilet at a golf outing, but what? Out on the course.
Out on the course. Not strong. I'd say Letitier.
Okay.
Letitier, Dowie, and a professional golfer.
Was Dowie wearing clothes?
This is another story where I've seen a lot more of Ian Dowie than I probably wanted to. Producer Ben's saying we need to move on for some reason. He was thoroughly well-dressed and very pleasant. One line on each of these, and I'll just flip-flop between you. Swansea, Southampton, Barry Glendening.
Another defeat for Swansea in a game that seems to have been dreadfully boring. And is unlikely to live long in the memory of anyone who saw it. On a good day for various, you know, lots of England strikers scored over the weekend, but lots of Ireland strikers scored as well. The two, Irish internationals, Wes Houlihan and Robbie Brady scored for Norwich in their draw. Shane Long scored for Southampton, another good header. And John O'Shea was man of the match for Sunderland against Manchester United. So clearly, either Ireland or England are going to win Euro 2016.
Nick, you have a pre-prepared line on Bournemouth.
I have prepared this until it's coming out of my ears.
Isn't pre-prepared a tautology? It's something's either prepared or it isn't. You don't pre-prepare something.
It's a good point.
Did you pre-prepare that point?
No.
It's lucky
it's
you just did it.
It's one I've made before.
Rather than the pen.
When people use the expression pre-prepared, which I think is redundant.
Nick, you got something to say about Bournemouth?
I'd like to really spontaneously point out here that that I'm a little bit worried about Bournemouth's defence. That's really brought things down, isn't it? Because there's been a lot of chat about how Newcastle, for example, invested a lot of money in their attack and nothing in their defence, and we've seen the ensuing shambles. Now I'm a massive fan of what Eddie Howe has done at Bournemouth and of every part of the setup down there. It's fantastic. But Howe brought in a lot of attackers over January, a Turbe, a Fobe. He brought Graben back for an eye-watering amount of money. And they'll score goals. I'm just not sure about that defence. He's not really added to it. He brought Tyrone Mings in the summer, who was laid low. Distan, who is 37 now and hasn't pulled up any trees at all. And I just worry that they have not invested enough in safeguarding stuff further back. And Stoke exposed them pretty well at the weekend. Mbeula looks a fantastic player and means we can keep trying to fit Tame Mbeula, Tame Impala into headlines for as long as possible. And they look a very good team. He'll be a good signing. But I've just got a slight concern about Bournemouth's January transfer dealings.
Palace 1, Watford 2, Palace are sliding. Everton 0, West Bromwich Albion 1. No one saw that coming.
Everton had 24 shots on goal and still managed to lose 1-0.
Sad for them.
It's a remarkable statistic. I think the only team who's ever done that, or done worse, is Arsenal, who once lost 1-0 against West Ham, having had 25 shots on target. West Brom had one shot on target in that game, which I believe, and I'm prepared to stand corrected, but as far as I know, that's the only shot they've had on target in 5 matches.
There's no better way to end this pod. Barry, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Nick, thank you. Lovely to meet you.
Thank you, you too.
Thanks, Philippe.
Oh, yes.
We'll be back on Thursday.